Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and joining me today is Susanna Marshall. Today's guest has built a remarkable career in public service with nearly 30 years of experience shaping Arkansas's financial landscape. Susanna Marshall currently serves as both the Arkansas State Bank Commissioner and the Arkansas Securities Commissioner, two major leadership roles she was appointed to in 2020 and 2023, respectively. Susanna started her journey with the Arkansas State Bank Department back in 1995 as a commercial bank examiner and steadily worked her way up through the agency. Today, she oversees everything from state chartered banks and trust companies to securities, mortgage lending, and money service industries, helping to protect Arkansas's consumers and support strong financial institutions. Alongside her state duties, Susanna serves on several key boards, including the Arkansas Teachers Retirement System and the State Board of Finance. She was recently elected treasurer of the board for the Conference of State Bank Supervisors and continues to be an active in financial education efforts across the region. Her story is one of steady leadership, deep commitment, and long-term impact in the world of finance. Welcome, Susanna.
Thank you, Lindsay. I appreciate that. That's a long introduction for someone who is a bank examiner at heart.
Well, listen, I always hear on Banking Matters, we always love to hear kind of your journey through. So that's why we don't like to go in too much detail. So I'd love to hear from you kind of how you got your start and how you kind of landed where you have.
Sure. Happy to share. Like with many people, young people going through school growing up, I was fortunate to work in some family-owned businesses. I love being around people, and so that was a natural fit, but not sure exactly where I wanted to land. I love the business side of things. I decided to get a degree in accounting, but while I was in college, I wanted a part-time summer job that didn't entail being outside because I had been a lifeguard. And so I landed at a family friend's bank. I was the summer teller, and I did that for several summers. And then my last couple of years of college, I wanted to work a little bit more part-time, get a little bit more experience, real life, not internship. Back in my day, they didn't have much of that. And so I started working a couple of days a week at the bank and really enjoyed it. Enjoyed the people aspect of it, but enjoyed the business and what the banks meant to their communities. And so after graduation, still really undecided, but I was offered a full-time job at the bank. And happenstance, this is a lesson, and maybe I'll share a little bit more later on, but never be surprised about where you are and what time and what opportunities may come out of the blue. And so I was at an event with some mutual friends, and I got introduced to a lady who was a bank examiner, and a phone call and a couple of interviews and, some tense moments. And 30 years later, here I am. And it has literally been one of those blessings in life that I just fell into a career that I didn't know existed, didn't know I wanted to do, and have been so fortunate to have, such opportunity at locally, regionally, nationally, and really have a passion for what our industry does, just, again, locally, regionally, and nationally, and how important strong financial services are both to communities and, of course, here to the great state of Arkansas and for your listeners all around our country. So very proud to be a part of that, a small part of that industry.
No, I love it so much. Our stories are really honestly very similar. Mine was the exact same way. And I would not be where I am without falling in love. And it was during college with community banks, the ones that I grew up seeing down the street. And then I got to really experience and see the difference that we can make, the role that we play in the community. And like you said, I had no idea that this existed when I was in college, especially in high school. And so I love to hear that. I get so excited. And I'm so passionate about the role that community banks play and what we do. And so I would really love to hear with that passion that you've had and that experience with your prior roles, what are some challenges your banks are facing and what are you guys doing to kind of help them navigate those?
Sure. And, Lindsay, great question, because there is never a dull moment in this industry. And as strong and successful as we have been, and when I say we, I certainly focused in on Arkansas and the financial services sector here and banking in Arkansas, but with my different roles, I do have that regional and national perspective. So not that we are just in a, what I would call a fairly good position now, but we really have been over the years. We had the great financial crisis that many of your listeners may have been involved with or familiar with. That is our most recent stressful period in our industry. But this business comes and goes. It cycles. It tracks sometimes with the larger economy, but with some regional issues. And certainly is no, we're not immune to challenges, right? So where we find ourselves right now coming out of the pandemic, banks on the whole, and especially here in Arkansas, are faring very well. I'm very pleased with the numbers we're posting. I think many of us in the business have been kind of holding our breath for several years now to just see what, is there another shoe going to drop? Or if we know there's going to be a cycle, are we entering it? What stage are we in it? What's yet to come? And so there's really been not significant deterioration to speak of at all. I believe we are seeing, you know, some markets, some sectors, some type of lending activity that are seeing some pressure, but I think it's part of the larger, you know, focus and scale. Nothing that is giving us, I would say nothing keeps me up at night in terms of financial performance and financial metrics. And let me build on that a little bit, if you will. The massive rate hikes that we had in our industry and throughout the economy back in 2023 and the effect of that, we are still feeling it. Of course, borrowers, consumers are feeling it. If you're a depositor, you're still hopefully being, you're loving and taking advantage of a higher rate environment for your deposit activity. Borrowers have reacted, what I would say, fairly well to a higher rate environment. The mortgage industry, secondary mortgage market, residential mortgage market, that's kind of the exception. They're still, you're still seeing some effects of that, and it's really having a lingering impact. But people have to have houses, and they move and they relocate, and new home starts and existing home sales. All of that is a very big part of its own in the discussion of banking and finance. And so there's still some, certainly some pressure there that we need to continue to monitor. But I think the one thing that has been beneficial to all of us in the industry is that the Fed has had a pause for some months. And so it's allowed the banks to kind of regroup and work on their balance sheets to restructure them, take advantage of where we are, make some adjustments, and really kind of absorb this higher rate environment that we've been in for some time now compared to years of what I would call a historically low or no, almost no rate environment. So they're doing a great job of balancing through that. So the financial metrics are holding, and I'm using that from returns on assets. So that's earning capacity, net interest margins on the whole are performing very well. Now I will brag certainly on my Arkansas banks. We almost always beat the national average in certain financial metrics, whether that's return on assets or earnings, profitability, net interest margin. We are showing strong there, but even at the national level, not seeing, deterioration or weak performance. I think many of our institutions certainly would like to take advantage of more opportunities for earnings. But it's, I think everybody's generally pretty pleased. I was traveling the state this week, actually, as I do many weeks when I have the opportunity to get out and hear what's going on in our local communities. And I hear and I talk to my peers that are commissioners in other states, and that's generally the sentiment. Again, asset quality is holding pretty well. We are seeing a little bit of uptick in other real estate, which is our foreclosed assets. A little bit of uptick. I think those markets are isolated. Don't see that accelerating rapidly throughout the rest of this year, but certainly an area to watch. We know the agricultural industry. That's significant here in Arkansas, and many of us in the southern region. We know that the agriculture industry is under a lot of pressure, both from the commodity pricing standpoint, as well as just, the uncertainty, whether it's with tariffs or with input costs, rising fuel costs, potentially, and of course, weather. The one thing that has nothing to do with the financial side of the house is recent and longstanding, rains and delays for this 2025 crop. So if you're an agri bank or you're an agri customer, this is a really challenging time. things that are not financial in nature. Let me backtrack for another one. I think another big one that I want to highlight, and I talk to my banks about this all the time, is liquidity and funds management. Now, that's not a financial metric, but that is certainly an area which I think is going to give us all a heightened focus and on the banker side of it. There are so many more competitors out there for your depositors' dollars. That's great, right? Competition is great. Banks do well at competition. Now, they may not like it, but they do well with it, and they're used to it, and they know how to compete and are, you know, always thinking about how to differentiate themselves, put themselves first, and give the customer so many options for choosing a traditional bank relationship. And very proud of how they've always focused on serving the customer in that way. But nowadays, if it's, you know, whether it's online or on a cell phone, consumers have access to so many other ways to engage and invest and, you know, look for opportunities of how to manage their money. And so that increased competition, and of course, a higher rate environment gives consumers even more opportunity. That is putting pressure on what I would call just traditional liquidity and funding structures for institutions. And that's hard, because what do banks do? They take in deposits and lend them out. And that's the name of the name of the game. And so as those traditional legacy core deposit sources are being rethought or restructured, and there's more, like I said, more competition for that customer dollar, I believe that's going to be something we're going to really need to focus on, and maybe be open to rethinking what that looks like long term, because I don't believe that trend's going to reverse. The non-financial factors that are affecting all of us, even whether it's a consumer level or the industry level, the list is long, but I really will say my top three or four. One is cybersecurity risk. It is every day, all day. It's in our personal lives, whether we get a notification that, you know, a credit card has been compromised, or whether we are being bombarded with threats or you know, teasers or phishing campaigns, and having to be hyper vigilant as consumers on what that looks like. The banks are in the same position, and they are probably, I would say, almost a larger target, if you will, because that's when fraudsters or criminals, you know, they want to go after the money. Well, thankfully, the days of the bank robberies, those have changed, but this is the new era of how is a criminal going to go after the money, and they're going to, you know, go through from an electronic standpoint, from a third party type of standpoint, try to penetrate banks' firewalls and protections, or the customers' logins and credentials. And that is really, we're seeing that fraud and that risk accelerate. So cybersecurity risk is one of that out and out fraud in our financial services sector has continued to ramp up. And when I get a phone call from an institution and we're visiting about those type of risks, they're telling me just the sheer volume and the new generation of what that looks like. And I'm glad to hear that we as regulators, and I've got my federal counterparts and others, know that this is something we want to really help tackle. I don't have the answer for it right now, certainly, but again, the vigilance and the cost that banks have to implement to help offset that increased cybersecurity risk and fraud is significant. And that is a financial impact. It is a financial metric that we need to monitor. Artificial intelligence is a topic we're all going to be talking about. As I tell people, every time I pick up a periodical or something to read or online or the news, we're talking about AI, artificial intelligence, whether it's in education or agriculture or financial services or just everyday way of life, healthcare. That is, and I'm optimistic about what that looks like for our personal lives and our business lives in the future. I think that is something that we really can see opportunity for, but there also is certainly the enhanced risk for potential misuse, avenues for invitations to fraud and other threats that can come through maybe not strong protocols around a good AI posture, and just quite frankly, a lack of knowledge, awareness, and education on it. We're all going to be learning together, and that's going to be critical, you know, for us today, our next generation, all people that are in the business sector right now, and of course the young people that are coming up and their understanding and adoption and willingness to use AI in their lives. And so those will be big topics that are not going to be immune to our banking industry and things that we've got to think about, or the regulatory industry for that matter either. If your viewers or listeners keep up with a lot of banking topics, we're entering a new phase of talking about digital assets, specifically stable coins. It is a hot topic right now at the federal level, and talking about proposals both at House Financial Services Committee as well as the Senate Banking Committee, and looking at proposed legislation and what that looks like going forward. You know, there is certainly a lot of interest. And so as we work, I'm very supportive of the idea that we want and need some frameworks around that, because I think that's going to make it adoption and utilization much more efficient and streamlined. Myself, as you mentioned on my introduction, I work closely with my peers across the state system through the Conference of State Bank Supervisors. And so we are actively engaged in those discussions, knowing that, oftentimes states and state institutions are the innovators. That's where new ideas are born, and that's exciting. Arkansas is certainly a leader in that space, I believe, and have been for many, many years. And so as we think about the next generation of banking and financial services, not just legacy activity, but new products and services, digital assets will be a part of that conversation. And quite frankly, at the request of and demands of consumers, both locally, regionally, and nationally, and globally. Certainly, as I see digital assets playing a big role in cross-border activity, international and global interconnectedness. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what the proposals will look like and how the future state of that. And one of your listeners may say, Commissioner, I'm a community bank in rural wherever, and that's not going to impact us. And I understand and can wholly appreciate that comment. But certainly, it will impact our industry on a larger scale over time. And so keeping an eye on that is a recommendation I have to your listeners, is just being aware of it. It's what I'm trying to share with my banks right now, is stay on top of it, listen, read, kind of have someone in your institution that's kind of a point person for, being aware of those changes and new trends. And I think maybe the last thing I'll just hit on, and you probably have another question for me, because as I said, there's always so many challenges, but opportunities that impact our industry. And so always happy to kind of download a quick and dirty list. But just like with any business, I see the succession and labor supply issues really the impact that's having on our industry. And if you'll allow me for a moment to explain there, just whether it's after the pandemic and labor supply was in a state of flux, whether there were shifting desires or opportunities for how we lived and worked, and whether it was remote work or we can live in one state and work in another. And so all those things coming into play impacted our industry. It impacted the banking sector, certainly. But I'm going to layer on one other one, and that is, again, this theme of succession, especially in the community banking sector, which so many institutions in this country I'm so proud of, really can and do build themselves as community banks. You know, we're down to, I think our count at March 31st is we're down to about 3,900 commercial banks in this country, 39 and some change, but most of those being community banks in Arkansas and across the country. But it's that ownership. So that's the first succession. If you have a family-owned bank and that next generation is not going to come back to the town to own it, so who's that? What's that going to look like, and how's that going to drive merger and acquisition activity? But if that ownership's there, then do you have board succession? Every bank is supported and successful by a strong and engaged board. And who are those going to be the next leaders? that are going to engage and want to raise their hand and say, yes, I want to be a part of a bank's board of directors of any size institution with any type of complexity or footprint. And then it's management succession. Are we seeing and training and exciting, engaging and getting buy-in for our next leaders? Our young individuals coming out of college or people that are in a mid-career or wanting to change career, are we attractive and attracting new bankers? And then it's just, and new leaders. And are our bankers willing to step up and take management roles? That's true in the regulatory industry and any other aspect of financial services. But then just quite frankly, is the front line, is the customer service role, which is so critical in the success of a community bank. What's that competition like and for other business sectors? And so that's really, you know, what I would highlight is one of those, you know, we don't think about it, but we know we're all living it and hearing it and seeing it. And it will be critical to our ongoing continued success.
Absolutely. I talked to one of the I think he's over the marketing and communications for Washington State Bank, and they have this pilot program. And this past year was the first year that they ran it where they're going into high schools to start educating and teaching about banks. Like I talked to him, I think mid-year last year, super excited about that because, again, we both said that we had never thought about this as a career. And honestly, the only way to get that information out there is to start being and showing and explaining and reaching out to that audience, be that at the high school or the college level. I think because everybody looks at a bank and they think, oh, tellers and lenders, and that's it. But there are so many options and so many different avenues that people can go into a career. And also with this succession, just in the banks that I get to work with over the last 3 years, succession has hit every one of them that has touched already. And it is so important. And I know the bank, the last bank that I was in, I was part of the succession plan. And so it, and in these small rural communities that where I live, and I know there's a ton in Arkansas as well, it's just so important. They want those community banks, they want local people. They want people from here that will are coming back to their hometowns or they're new to the regions, but they want people that are in love with that community. And I know that that was one of the big values, but it's so important to start planning ahead. And that's been a common theme. I talked to several other guests about it as well. So yeah, definitely think that that is majorly important.
I agree. And enthusiastic to hear about programs like that. That's awesome.
Yes, yes, it's great. I'm really hoping that after this next semester, that he did mention that their program that we're rolling it out to the different state associations too, to participate in. But yeah, it's just again, I just think it's all about getting out there, and the more you know, and more things that kids see, then they can see themselves in that position and think, oh, maybe I can do something like that. But yeah, it's definitely really important. And also, are there any specific regulations that maybe your banks are like trying to navigate, or there it's tying them up, or it's really affected your banks? I would really love to hear about that.
Sure. Let me kind of pivot for a quick moment to kind of give you what my viewpoint is of the regulatory, if you want to call it burden, and as a regulator, using the word regulatory burden, I know is unique. But so through the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, one of the things they do quarterly, and if your listeners have not been made familiar with it, it's on their public website at csbs.org, but it's a quarterly community bank sentiment index. And it's a survey that goes out to community bankers. We as the regulators send it out, but it gauges through a series of questions their input on where the industry stands. And so on the most recent quarter first quarter of 2025, and then it graphs it and it measures sentiment. So a positive sentiment above 100, negative sentiment below 100. And regulatory burden is one of those items that they assess. And I believe on the March survey results, it was at an even 100 sentiment. But previously, it had been very high. There was a negative. We felt the banks, the industry itself felt that there was a huge negative, heavy burden from the regulatory perspective. And so that was very much weighing on them and in a concern and thinking about that strategically and what that looks like. And so I'm glad to see that that is, for lack of a better word, improving. And I certainly think that we are seeing and hearing much more of that across the industry, that there is a sense and feel and what we're seeing coming out of the federal regulators at the DC level is some notable change and discussions and proposals about what the future state of some of the regulatory burden looks like, or the future state of some of the regulations, and how they can thoughtfully think about appropriate modification or maybe some pullback of that, which is wonderful. I love to hear that, and I think that's great for our industry. But if you want to like pull one out in specific that I know I've spent a lot of time talking to my banks about, and I know it's on their minds. And this is a proposal, a rule that came out of the Conference of, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, that is what's called a Dodd-Frank Section 1071. And I see you smiling. So you've heard about it too, because I think we all have in the business. And you know, maybe that's an easy one to pick on, but it's certainly an example of a rule that was going to have a significant and outsized impact on community banks, with really, quite frankly, an uncertain level of positive outcome or opportunity or value. And that rule now is in a state of flux. And it's not that any bank is unwilling or unable to adhere to rules. They all want to. That's the name of the game, whether it's a state level rule or a federal rule. They understand that this is a highly regulated industry, and they understand that those rules are in place for consumer protection, for business operations and good financial services. But some of them, specifically this 1071, was going to have an outsized impact on many institutions, just the burden alone for collecting the data. And that data of 1071, which that rule, just out for someone that may not be familiar, is data collection for small business lending. Well, If you're in the industry or you're familiar with it, no two small businesses are the same. Period, paragraph. And so just the ability to be compliant with that rule and the ability to the impact it was going to have on expense and resources for an institution to comply was challenging. And so it's really kind of at a pause right now due to several factors, some litigation. I think CFPB is evaluating its what the structure of it is. And so I'm very proud to hear that. I know that there's some push to really reconsider what that looks like. And so I encourage everybody to stay aware of the changes, kind of keep that as a ticker to kind of stay engaged with your industry or your trade groups or however you get your news. And hopefully that, we'll at least have some information to where banks aren't going to be, at least they have some clear direction on what that looks like. And hopefully some enhancements to where compliance with that would be much more feasible if it stays in place. So. But
I was going to say, with 1071, just speaking with the banks that are in our portfolio that I get to work with, like there were several that we were in the process of, I think that we will need to hire another person to help take that load on, like at least one. So it was, 1071 has been a big conversation because we were getting prepped and ready and trying to think about how is this going to look? Because again, we're community, like I work with all community banks. They are who our small businesses call when they need something. And so how do we still make this doable and glean that information for regulators, but also how do we still make this consumer friendly too? And it was, I'm glad that there has been a pause, but there's been so much just brainstorming and trying to picture how this would look, what it would look like. And so it's been a heavy burden, I think, for everyone.
Yeah, I agree.
For sure.
But there's a lot out there. Again, it's one of the most highly regulated industries, but I think overall our industry does well with compliance, a variety of, state and federal laws. So
definitely agree.
I know they work hard at it, at least.
So. For sure. And while I am glad for all of the regulations, because it's job security for me, it is sometimes overwhelming if you can't like hone in and look at one piece at a time. But yeah, I'm definitely thankful for that pause and that reconsideration for 1071.
Sure. Sure.
But as we wrap up, I would like to know, what is one piece of advice you would like to leave our listeners?
Well, I think I kind of alluded to it earlier, and it is, and you echoed it as well, Lindsay, is just this idea that our industry has so much to offer, whether it's the regulatory side, the compliance side, marketing, management, customer service, you name it, accounting, backroom, policy, or business development. There are so many opportunities within our industry for people to serve. It is, to me, the best advice I could give someone is, if this is of interest to you, put your foot in the door, engage yourself with bankers that you know, or friends of family or friends of friends, learn more about it. And if you're in the industry and you want to think about long term and what does this look like going ahead and what kind of future can I have? As I tell my staff here, especially when they come to work with me, early on and they're in their first couple of years, I always try to encourage them to always put yourself where the conversation is happening and always raise your hand and volunteer for anything and everything that you can, because making yourself visible, engaging, working hard is always at the forefront of it. But being a person that says yes with a positive attitude and a willingness to lead and learn, gets noticed, and it pays off. And 30 years later, you can have a career in this industry if you want, and you can leverage that banking career in so many ways. As I think you alluded, you've worked for several different banks. I've been one place for 30 years, but those type of opportunities and the benefits of being in an industry that is so critical to the success of our local economies and our states and this country is just rewarding. And so I'm a cheerleader for anyone and hope that a lot of people think about considering the banking industry as their career choice.
Absolutely. I love that advice. That just, it really does hit home, because I would not have been able to be where I am without being that person to engage and ask questions, because it is recognizing, like we said about the succession, banks are looking for people that are ready and willing to go. And I've done everything inside of a bank except make a loan. And so being able to ask those questions and be willing to do everything, it just made me such a more well-rounded banker. And so those opportunities I'll forever be grateful for. But yes, I love that advice so much. And Susanna, thank you so much for your time today. And for the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.